Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. With me, we have the author of the upcoming book, The Human Way, Kelly O'Dale. How are you today, Kelly?
Very good, thank you, Miro.
Great, it's lovely to have you on the podcast. And for our audience, Kelly is a leading expert and trainer in management and works with some of Europe's largest companies. He is a frequent speaker and a media commentator and is now based in Sweden. So without further ado, Kelly, let's just get into today's podcast. And I think the first question that I ask all of our guests is, what inspired you to write the book?
Well, that's a good question. I felt like there's a need for a book like this. At the same time, I was really frustrated myself because I feel like there's so many books about management leadership that are written that I wondered what I was really going to contribute. But I realized after some reflection that there's not really very many books that really address the human side of leadership. Most of the books are actually more task-focused, talk about what you should do, and somehow the idea being that if you focus on tasks, somehow you'll be successful. But I think most of us with time and working as leaders realize that just focusing on tasks doesn't work. You have to get the people with you. You have to focus on the human side of leadership. So I really think that more literature, more books, more thinking on that side of the leadership formula is important.
Right, absolutely. And I agree with you. I think that sort of the culture of data and you know, task management can really take away from what you say to our humanity in a way. And yeah. I know that you have talked a lot during your speaking engagements, etc., about the Ten Commandments. Can you tell us more about the concept behind the Ten Commandments and how you came up with it?
Well, you know, really the concept of the Ten Commandments has started up as just a rhetorical way, a clever way of packaging a speech. I was talking a lot about in lectures about my views on leadership, and I'm often introduced as the preacher or the minister who turned businessman, and that's not completely correct because I never was ordained and I've never actually worked as a minister, but I did study for the ministry, because I'm often presented in that way as kind of a humorous introduction to me in my speeches, I thought it might be fun just to package my thoughts as Ten Commandments. And the notion of the Ten Commandments at the same time is a little bit misleading because they're really not commandments at all. They're more expressions of values, I mean, expressions of how we should think more than they are. For me, the notion of commandment really gives an idea that these are things you should do, and I'm really focused more on how we should think. I think that our underlying values, the way we view leadership, ultimately dictate what we do and certainly how we do the things we do. So that our underlying values, our underlying perspectives on leadership are actually more important than what we actually do.
Right, okay, very interesting, and it's quite for me fascinating that you say that, because I think that a problem that we face in the workplace, and I think that's a global issue perhaps, is that we're kind of pushed away from our humanity and kind of our emotions and our true self, I guess, in a way, and we've always been told, you know, to be a role model, to be perfect in that way. But I think that's changing. I think there's a shift, especially when it comes to age groups like millennials, which are a lot more open about being who they are at the workplace. So how can we learn to accept our humanity while we're at work? How can we learn to work alongside with it?
Well, I think you make some good points here. I mean, the reality is we've never been able to get away from our humanity. We can't leave our human side of us outside the door when we walk in the office. It goes with us. And a lot of the time, the failures that we see in organizations, and by failures it could be total failures, but it could be simply failures to really achieve our aspirations and our goals fully. Those failures are often the result of the fact that we're ignoring who we are and how people work together. And you know, so ultimately, I think that humanity's always been there. We've just, by ignoring it, limited our ability to succeed. And you bring up the point, for example, that we should be a role model. I've often wondered about that, and I developed the idea in my book too. I've often wondered if you accept the premise that managers are just normal people, just like everyone else in the organization, then you have to also accept the premise that they are no better and no worse on the average. Clearly, there may be individual bosses who are better human beings in some way, and there may be some that are less good than the average. But on the average, we're all about the same. And if you accept that premise, then how in the world can any of us be a role model consistently for the others? I'm much more in favor of the idea that all of us should try to be role models for each other, regardless of what formal position we hold in the company. But we should also be aware of the fact that human beings aren't always going to live up to our expectations, and that's not because they're bad people, that's simply because they're people.
Yes, absolutely. And
I think really by taking that more realistic view, you know, I've often wondered if you base your business idea, if your business strategy and your business idea is based on people behaving other than people do, then you're bound to fail. You have to work with the assumption that people behave in the way people do.
Yes, and absolutely.
If you let a lamb into a cage with a lion, you'd have to see it as an anomaly if the lion didn't eat the lamb. That's kind of what lions do. In the same way, we're a human animal and we have certain normal ways of behavior, and whether or not you can find exceptions to that rule, that's fine. But I wouldn't build my whole business idea on being able to find exceptions to human behavior. I think I would be much more successful by basing it on realistic human behavior.
Right, okay, fascinating stuff. And actually leads me into my next question. And I know that we kind of talked about the idea of a role model and, you know, good examples. But this kind of culture, which has been around for us for so long, I think you would, I certainly would say that it can indeed affect teams negatively and kind of do the exact opposite of what it's trying to achieve. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there are a number of things. First of all, I really want to believe that there have been good organizations and good humane leaders around for a long time. It just that may not have been the majority or the norm. So in one way, I really want to believe that what we're talking about today is not new, but maybe it's new that it's actually becoming more focused on it. And I think one of the things is that research is, behavioral research has shown us that a lot of things we sort of knew were true, really are true, like that employee involvement increases their engagement, that you know, the notions of doing things that you enjoy, doing things that stimulate you intellectually and that satisfy you, make you more productive. I think a lot of people have had those kinds of notions, but research is showing us that they're not just notions, they're actually true. At the same time, some of the notions we've held, or that many of us have held, I know for myself, when I was a young manager, that I really had the notion that my job was, or part of my job was, motivating my employees, and their science is showing us that that's probably a false notion. We really can't motivate other people. People are motivated. What we can do is figure out how to align our interest better so that if you and I want to achieve something together, then we're going to invest ourselves. We're going to invest our motivation in that thing. And if one of us doesn't really want to do it, then at best, we're going to be giving a half-hearted effort. And you know, again, these are... I think a lot of the trend now is that we're finally getting some kind of real knowledge around this. And I think a lot of people have historically, how did we become leaders? You know, most of us just looked at the leaders we've had, and they were also just looking at the leaders they had. So it's sort of been a process of the blind leading the blind for a long, long time.
Hmm.
Until recently, there weren't really any, let's say, academic education programs for leaders. The things that we thought were for leaders were like MBAs and things like that, which were highly business-oriented. By business, I mean they're looking at finances and they're looking at economics and they're looking at marketing. It's only recently that you see programs that are really leadership-focused. So most of the people who are leading other people in our organizations and are trained as engineers, lawyers, or trained in business. And there's very little behavioral sciences training behind the leaders of organizations.
Right, and I think that's a great point, that it is a recent occurrence. You know, it hasn't been around for that long, and it's definitely making a huge ripple impact throughout, I'd say, any industry and any type of business. But as someone who has worked in both the US and now based in Sweden, what is, in your opinions, the difference in leadership between the two countries? Is there anything that's perhaps standing out for you?
Well, those kinds of questions when you compare countries or regions are always challenging, because you sort of have to stereotype, and as soon as you stereotype, you know that you're wrong. There's companies or organizations in Sweden and the U.S. that are run in very different ways with very different leadership styles. That being said, if I dare to do some generalizations and some stereotyping, I would say that in general, Sweden has had a lot more of a longer history of decentralized, heavily delegated authority, a long tradition of employee involvement, even to the point of having laws that govern certain types of questions that impact the employee's life, that the law says that the employees have to be involved in those decisions. And often that is done in a representative way through the trade unions, but nonetheless, the laws are clear that the employees should have a say in decisions that impact their working environment. And those traditions have forced managers, forced employers to create employee involvement. And if I'm a little bit provocative, I might say that forced is maybe the right word, because, you know, from the beginning, many years ago, it was probably seen as more of a burden by many managers than it was a benefit. But I think we're realizing now that because we were forced to do these things, forced to create employee involvement, that our businesses were more successful. And if you think about, Sweden's a tiny little country. I guess the entire population of Sweden's about the size of half of London. And yet there are many, many very big, successful global industries based out of Sweden. Many of the exciting new startup industries like Spotify are coming from Sweden. You wonder, how could this tiny little country with so few people be so successful? And I think clearly a part of it is just that they have this slightly different leadership model. In the States, my experience has been, again, with some some great exceptions, but as a whole, it's more of a top-down management style, stricter adherence to governance and steering principles that, you know, people are, in some cases, feel inhibited and not willing to take risks. So I think there are some key differences.
Okay, very interesting. And, I mean, do you perhaps think that because of this, as you say, sort of provocative word, forced changes within business in Sweden, do you think that that's why Swedish leadership is so effective and it's kind of well known to be one of the most effective sort of leaderships around not only Europe but in the world? Is there any perhaps other reason? Is it a cultural thing?
Well, I mean, I think it's all related to culture. Like I said, the Swedish culture is a culture where people expect to have a lot of say in decisions at their work. They expect to have a lot of say in their politics, and expect to have a lot of say in the issues that surround them in their lives. So that, anybody who's ever worked with Swedish people or Swedish organizations will typically joke about that it takes a long time to make decisions. And clearly, being American, having lived here for 30 years, I can identify with that, and it can be very frustrating at times that decision-making processes do take a long time. But once a decision is made, you'll find that organizations move along at a much more rapid pace, where I've seen organizations in other countries, not just in the United States, but in other countries, that decisions are made more quickly. In many cases, they could be made very top down. There, you get an order from higher up that we're going to do something, and yet you don't find that the end results come any quicker, and in many cases they come slower. The additional time to create the involvement, to create the engagement, it has the added benefit of getting people on board, but it also has the added benefit of having many different perspectives on the question, coming up with better solutions. And once the decision's made, you have a higher level of commitment where you don't necessarily have to have an organization of people that are only doing things because they have to or feel forced to, but they're actually doing it because they understand it and they want to. Now, having said all this, I don't mean to paint up the Swedish business environment as something from another planet. Clearly, there are situations where managers miss the getting people involved early, even here in Sweden. But they also find when they do that it takes a longer time to succeed, and many times you don't. I work a lot with change management, for example, and you'll find in change initiatives that if you don't get the people involved early on, your chances of succeeding are far, far less than if you spend the time and effort initially getting everyone on board. And I think that, as on the whole, Swedish organizations have a longer history and a longer culture for doing just that.
Very fascinating. And my last question, Kelly, is the one that we asked all the other previous guest on the podcast, and that is, what are you currently reading?
Well, I'm one of those kind of people that always has five or six books going on my nightstand, but one of the more interesting ones, I think, is a book that's been around for a while that's given out by the Harvard Press, called Getting to Plan B, and it's by two authors named Mullins and Commissar, I think I said that right. I actually just kind of fell in love with the title. hypothesis or their thesis is really that nobody succeeds with plan A, that you might as well just start getting ready to get to plan B as fast as you can. And I'm only about a third of the way through the book now, but I really like their thesis, just creating a sense of acceptance for the fact that achieving complicated plans is difficult, it's risky, and that it's not a failure that you don't succeed with plan A. It's just normal. And if you could succeed at plan B and not have to go to plan C and D or E, then it really improve things. And so I think it's really, so far, a very interesting book.
Oh, sounds like an absolutely great book, and I'll definitely be on the lookout for it. And with that, Kelly, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today on the podcast. And for our audience, thank you very much for listening. And as always, our notes about today's podcast can be found in the notes below, and you can follow us at www.lidpublishing.com and on all social media channels at Lid Publishing. And of course, you can find Kelly on social media platforms such as LinkedIn at Kelly O'Dell. And if you would like to know more about what he does, you can visit www.astrakhan.ce, that is Astrakhan .se. And I would like to thank you very much, Kelly, for joining us again today.
Thank you.
And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Lid Radio.